We're live.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call the study session of the University City City Council meeting to order on April the 11th, 2022. Before turning to the subject matter at hand, are there any changes to the agenda for this evening? Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor and Council members, I have two proposed changes to tonight's agenda. The first is to add the swearing in for Elise Curry to the Senior Commission. And the second is to move up item K1 to place it as item D2. That concludes all my proposed.
Thank you. Mr. Smotherson.
Thank you, Mayor Crow. I just wanted to bring attention to the items in reference to Crescent Plumbing. And I believe they are, let me make sure I've got it right. Well, specifically, what I'm actually bringing in attention to is that I believe the address is in Ward 2, not Ward 3. And if you notice on the front page of each for Crescent Plumbing.
Is Crescent Plumbing on tonight? I don't think Crescent Plumbing is on. It is on? Oh, new bill. Okay, thank you.
Are you seeing the staff report?
The 6610 Olive.
Right, 6610 Olive. I believe that is a Ward 2 address, not okay. Ward 3.
Well, that's the new business. Okay.
And that's all. Just bringing attention to that.
All right.
That's
it. Thank you. Thank you. Hearing nothing else, we'll take care of those changes during the regular portion of the meeting. Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor and Council members, tonight we have Interim Director for Planning and Development, John Wagner, who will be doing a presentation on the proposed redistricting, as well as text amendments that have been considered by the Planning and Zoning Commission. Mr. Wagner.
John, could you turn on your microphone, please? Thank you.
There we go. How's that? Oh, that sounds much better. Good evening, everybody. Tonight, let's go straight to the redistricting to see where that. As I told Mr. Rose last week, I was hoping there'd be a little bit more choices to look at on this, but as it turns out, it's reasonably straightforward. The 2020 census shows 35,065 residents in University City, as outlined per ward. Ward 1, 12,444. Ward 2, 11,597, and Ward 3, 11,024. Of course, Ward 1 had more than 10% of any other district, so we needed to 12.1% more. So we needed to move, most logically, some of the members from Ward 1 into Ward 3 to kind of even those numbers out a little bit. Of course, that makes most sense over at Old Bonham in the census track that I have outlined in red. Let me zoom in on that a little bit. According to the 2020 census, there were 767 people in that census tract. Of course, you could tell by the earlier map that not all of them were in Ward 1. Some of those were in Ward 3, as outlined on that map there as well. So the tricky part, somewhat tricky anyway, was to find out exactly how many people were in Ward 1 in that census tract of that 767 people. So the census blocks proved helpful in that respect. Census blocks 5,000, 5,001, 5,002, and 5,003 were already in Ward 3, and the remainder, as shown below the red dotted line, were in Ward 1. And as the numbers break out, there were 245 in Ward 3 and 522 in Ward 1. So it makes most sense to move that 522 from Ward 1 into Ward 3. And you'll notice there at the top is 25 people in Ward 1 outlined in the green, and I'll go over that in just a moment. So if we move those 522 people into Ward 3, we come down to a difference of 3.2% more in Ward 1 than there is in Ward 3, which far below our 10% threshold. And that really just evens out that that ward district boundary line by just taking it right across Old Bonhomme. Kind of cleans up an irregular map otherwise. But there's one more option here, that little track just north of Old Bonhomme on the other side of 170 contained 25 people. If we were to draw the district boundary entirely north of Old Bonhomme, as it is shown on there, then our difference comes down to 2.78% more than Ward 1. Yeah. Relatively minor change for the most part. So we would have 11,897 in Ward 1. Ward 2 would remain the same at 11,597, and Ward 3 at 11,571. For 35,065 people. Those were the two options for the redistricting. It's just a matter of really, if the first option to bring it down to 3.2% is preferable, then it's just a matter of whether or not you want that little group of 25 people on the west side of 170 to remain in Ward 1, or if we move them toward 3. Happy to entertain questions on that particular part, if that's appropriate, Mr. Rose.
Mr. Wagner, when we discussed this issue, I was under the impression we were making a recommendation to the mayor and council regarding what option.
Yes, I believe as this option. It seems like everything on that west side of 170 is kind of one neighborhood. So I think it makes most sense to keep that in Ward 1 and go with this particular option here, which brings the percent difference to 3.2. I think that's a better option, really. It kind of keeps everything on the west side of 170 voting in the Ward 1 district. So this would be the most logical option.
Mr. Clay.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Wagner. And so if I'm understanding where the Ward 3 boundary moves, currently it stops at Mayflower.
Correct.
If we're talking about that area,
yes.
In the west. It would migrate south to Old Bonhomme.
Correct. Actually, part of Mayflower is on that line, actually. The horizontal line there, the red one, actually goes right across Mayflower. So the lots on the southern half are already in are in Ward 1, and the top half is in Ward 3.
So this would progress. So basically all those houses that are, I guess, on the west side of Ruth Park,
that's now
in Ward 1, you go all the way to Old Bonhomme, they would be captured in Ward 3.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, everything going across that bottom over to where it says 1001, everything in that would be then in Ward 3.
Okay.
To my colleagues, I tend to agree that there's really Stacy, do you have more?
Go ahead, Mayor, and then I'll jump.
Mine's just more about making sure that particularly for those who represent Ward 1 and Ward 3, that if there's some nuanced community of interest we're missing, but having lived here as long as most of you, I'm not sure that there is any community of interest that we are dissecting in any way or dividing. And so to me, in order to keep the wards pretty even, this seems like an appropriate course of action, but I want to make sure everybody's paying attention to what we're doing here. So we only do this once every 10 years. Mr. Clay.
I think it's important, Mayor and my colleagues, to point out to folks who may be redistricted that it really does not materially change anything. I think, and my colleagues can correct me if I'm wrong, or the city manager, really the only thing that changes is, I think, your council person and thus who you're voting for. But from a municipal, certainly a state, federal perspective. Nothing changes in terms of elections. Nothing changes in terms of county representation. It's really just at the ward level and the council people who you are eligible to vote for. Is that a correct summary?
Honorable Mayor, Councilmember Clyde, that's correct.
Hearing no other, Mr. Smileson.
Thank you, Mayor Crow. Just one quick question, and that is there any notification from the city about this change to the residents in that area? And or if not, is there a way that Councilmember Clay and I could get the addresses that are specifically in this change in case we decide to notify if the city is not doing that?
Honorable Mayor, Mayor Pro Tem Smotherson, the next steps would be to, this was just to get, the presentation was intended to get input from the mayor and council on whether this was an acceptable recommendation to you. If it is, the next step would be moving it to the council level for consideration. And if you would like for us to notify those residents that would be redistrict, we can certainly do that. Or if you would prefer to just receive the addresses, we could do that as well.
Mr. Mulligan.
Thank you, Mayor. Councilmember Smotherson, Mayor Pro Tem. State law requires that before a redistricting ordinance is passed, that the ordinance must be published for at least 3 weeks in a daily newspaper. So that is one way that the public would be notified of the proposed change.
My guess is also we could put it on the website too, that for folks. So, Mr. Clay.
Thank you, Mayor. I would say, and I've clearly not counseled with Councilman Smotherson, but I would be an advocate of city notification, and then we can follow up individually to let folks know. But clearly that's a potential discussion.
If there's nothing else on this, we'll move to the second item on the agenda.
Back on December 15th of last year, the Plan Commission recommended favorably to the council to make two amendments to the zoning ordinance, and both of them are on the screen here. Let's I'll go through the first one. The first set of amendments involves changes to the requirements for notification to property owners, residents, and businesses for proposed amendments to the zoning map applications for conditional use permits and exceptions to these requirements. Basically, who receives a public hearing notice? Right now, property owners, according to the St. Louis County database, receive a public hearing notice, and I believe state law requires that radius be 185 feet. From the edge of the actual property or the group of properties being rezoned, if that's the case. We typically send out 300 feet, and we go quite a bit further than that, actually. So the one concern that I had was how readily this policy could be implemented. Really, right now, when I do a public hearing notice, I will go to the St. Louis County website, and I can draw a line around. Well, take a specific property if that's the case, or say in the case of the if it's a group of properties like it was on Avenir, I would draw a group of properties, draw a polygon around those properties, as it were, and type in my radius, and I get a list of 100, 200, maybe property owners, and I can actually print them out in PDF form, or save it as a PDF, and then print those labels out. Get the public hearing notice, fold them up, put the label on the envelope, and out they go. A couple hundred letters at one time takes about 2 or 3 hours, maybe depending on the number of public hearing notices. In this case, if we were to be required to send a public hearing notice to everybody, and which I think is a great idea, but everybody that lives in an apartment complex, for example, or not just beyond the owner of that apartment complex, I'm not sure how readily just yet those addresses are, even if it were just to occupant or a similar verbiage as we talked about at the plan commission meeting. I'm not sure if so it would take a sense, it would take it in essence a day or two to come up with that list of occupants to send the public hearing notice to. So I'm not sure how easily implemented the policy would be. And as I think Mr. Mulligan brought up at the meeting back in December, if it's just a policy, if it's something that we'd like to do, that's a great idea. But if it actually is a requirement, and then anybody could challenge that, if it's not done, somebody could challenge that particular conditional use permit or map amendment or whatever the case may be. So I think it's a great idea, but it could be a sticky wicket, as it were, as far as trying to implement how we get those addresses from the computer. That's the first one. And the second one, also kind of a not quite so clear cut. The second set of amendments involves changes in language from disabled to the more commonly accepted term these days of people with disabilities. And this change would be made to various sections of the zoning ordinance, several sections. I mean, it's a couple dozen sections probably that it would affect. And this one again is, and as Mr. Mulligan reminded us during the meeting, that it needs to adhere to state law relative to, I'm not sure if state law is caught up with people with disabilities per se, but people with disabilities has a different meaning now than it did maybe 20 or so years ago. People with disabilities includes people with developmental disabilities, for example, and they're on the spectrum. And as a father of a child with autism, I know what that spectrum is, and I know what that label can do firsthand, I think. So that one is also one that needs some attention, I think. And I think Mr. Mulligan offered to, at the time, draft up some language that would be presented to council. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there questions or comments from members of council as we proceed through this? Mr. Cusick.
Thank you, Mayor Crowe. Mr. Wagner, or perhaps Mr. Rose, then the second text amendment concerning, excuse me, the changing in the zoning code, or the zoning ordinance from disabled to people with disabilities. What about all the way across our code completely? Do we have other sections of the code where that would need to be addressed as well?
Honorable Mayor, Councilmember Cusick, that's a good legal question, I think. So I would refer
to— Do we have a good legal mind that we could direct that question towards?
That's right. So I'll refer to John, I tease with John. Our intention is to go through the code. There are several areas that need to be updated, this is an item that we could certainly include, making sure that if there are areas that it's consistent throughout the code. But I would ask City Attorney Mulligan to comment.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. So. I think the focus of this initially was term group home for the handicapped, they're physically and mentally handicapped, and that tracks state law. That's how the home is described under state statute dealing with zoning, and what that statute basically states is if there's a group home for mentally or physically handicapped individuals, that they're going to be treated like any other residents. And as long as it doesn't exceed 8 unrelated plus up to two house parents. Mm-hmm. Now, our code has that. We have a group home for the handicapped, small and then large, that being above the numbers I just mentioned. And that may be a conditional use permit. And so you see that term in that context. And one of the issues raised was, well, if we change it to disability, does that somehow change the scope of who may occupy these residences? And my thought on that, my suggestion to the Plan Commission was that if you want to change it to from handicap to disabled or people with disabilities, that we would have, we would add a sentence in the code that would state that for purposes of the interpretation and enforcement of this ordinance, this term means the same as group home for the handicap under state law. So you're not creating new categories of individuals, like, you know, maybe for instance, if you had students who perhaps had a learning disability, would that qualify? And you think of, you know, a number of university students who could potentially live together, unrelated students living together up to eight in a home. So you want to make sure that you understand that you're not expanding the scope unless that's your intent. So that was the code change that Mr. Wagner referred to that I suggested. With respect to other places in the code where it's used, not so much. I haven't done a word search, you know, it in the entire code, but I would be willing to bet that the word disabled or handicap appears elsewhere. While I was prosecuting, we use the handicap parking zone, it referred to. Mm-hmm. And that part of the code. So we'd have to probably do a search. In zoning, probably not so much. The main area is these group homes. And we actually were involved in litigation with Oxford House in the 90s. I was involved in that, which led to the creation of these new categories.
So may I ask either John or whom, or maybe Mr. Hales as well, the changes that are being proposed, are they being proposed from the Planning Commission itself? And the changes that they feel strongly that residents that are renters essentially need to have the same notice as property owners. Am I boiling it down to that question?
Yes, I think Dr. Wagner spelled it out, and we definitely talked about the challenges of logistics. And I think one of the other comments that was raised during that was, if we had that ability, would there be a benefit to the city in terms of identifying properties that may have illegal occupancy if they're checking that database? But it definitely was discussed as far as the challenges that Dr. Wagner stated here tonight.
And the proposed changes, knowing that we may be raising the bar for the concerns that the city would have as far as moving forward with a development and then a resident coming in and saying they didn't get notice, then the Planning Commission still felt strongly enough that it was important to move this forward. That can be a rhetorical question if you guys would like it, but I just think that at some point in time we're going to have to balance these needs of the exposure and the hurdles that we're going to have as a city, particularly this would be in all three wards where we've got a lot of rental property and we've got a lot of students. And if you'll recall, just a simple example on Forsyth of parking on the north side versus the south side, and the number of folks that were students who didn't really care until the time came, then they did care, but notices went to the owners of the buildings and not to the students. Yet it probably, if the notice had gone out, I'm not sure what response we would have still received. I'm not sure who had their, any lights on? Sure.
Would you I can address that, Mayor. So I was at the meeting. Both of these code changes were initiated by the Plan Commission. With respect to the notice, we did discuss that it could be done administratively, and then that way there couldn't be a legal challenge that you didn't follow the code, and therefore the action taken by the council was defective. And the Plan Commission consensus was that they'd like to see it in an ordinance rather than an administrative policy. I was just saying they just want to make sure that there's no administrative discretion on that. So that was the reason. Under state law, with respect to the 185 feet that Mr. Wagner mentioned, the purpose of that is so that owners may protest a zoning change, a zoning map amendment in the area. And there's a special process if requisite number of owners of property sign a protest petition, then it requires a supermajority of the council to approve it. So that's where that came from, the state law requirement that the owners be notified. And of course, you know ownership by looking at the St. Louis County records. So whereas occupants, you know, we do have occupancy permit records, but you know, sometimes we have accurate information. Sometimes we don't, depending on whether the people are reporting who all is occupying it. And it could be challenging to determine, you know, who exactly is occupying every property, whereas ownership is pretty easy.
Mr. Wagner, would you like to speak?
Yes, and relative to the occupancy permit information and its accuracy, I believe I noted on here earlier where there were 245, according to the census anyway, 245 people that lived in Ward 1 already. According to the occupancy permit information that we did, I did double check on this. It was like 291, so it's not exactly the closest in the world, but it wasn't, yeah. And there's been some questions on the accuracy of the census as well, but it took Barb about 3 or 4 hours to find the number of people that lived in. I wanted to check the addresses that were in Ward 1, and we found, I think, 291 or so that according to the occupancy permits themselves.
Well, I'm not sure that we've got necessarily a consensus on which way to go on this one. Maybe everyone else feels it's the appropriate way to go. I think I have some questions and concerns regarding what this would add to the city. And I think the question I would ask on the second text amendment would be, is this change in the space, which I understand the reasoning and the movement behind moving from disabled to people with disabilities, but you know, in most of the time in the law and ordinances, there's a term of art that you're used to following, and you follow that definition because it's been defined by someone usually at a higher level within the government that has given that term its meaning. So I'm trying to find out, are we on the cutting edge of this, or are there other cities that are moving this way with changing this, and then does that put that city then in conflict with state statute? So I'm not sure, Mr. White, if that's going to you or rhetorical again.
A little bit of both. I can check to see what some other cities are doing, but I don't believe it's been a blanket change across communities. I think Commissioner Peggy Holly was kind of wanting to bring the parts of the zoning ordinance, at least parts as she could, up to modern terminology, I think is how she may have described it.
Are there other comments or questions by members of council? I see no lights on. Mr. Rose, are you wanting anything further on this subject matter?
Honorable Mayor, council members, our intention would be to revisit both of the proposed text amendments at a later time with the Planning Commission, and to make sure that they, after we do some research regarding what other cities are doing, to share that information with them.
I have to say, I feel like I'm coming old and curmudgeon-y by the questions that I have asked and the comments that I've made. Mr. Wagner, thank you very much for your time this evening.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I don't know, is there anything else, not for this body, and I don't know that we have time to do anything to move into executive section, so we'll just stand adjourned until 6:30? Or you think we can?
Honorable Mayor, council members. The city clerk, Laurie, are we able to go into executive session? I think I could resolve my two issues pretty quickly. Oh, so it has to wait. Okay. Good.
Sounds like we're waiting. So the study session is adjourned and we'll start promptly at 6:30.